This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello and welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Dashan Johan. The Tunku Abdul Rahman Scholarship is open for application. The scholarship is an undergraduate degree scholarship open to high potential deserving students with a strong commitment to contribute to the development of Malaysia. What's interesting is that this isn't a merit-based scholarship, but a holistic and equitable scholarship. So joining me on the show today to discuss this scholarship and the importance of equitable scholarships altogether is Renuga Indran, Senior Marketing and Partnerships Executive at Yayasan Tunku Abdul Rahman, and Celine Louis, Program Executive also from WITA. Renu, Celine, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us today.
So, Renu, for the benefit of those who do not know, refresh our memories, what is Yayasan Tunku Abdul Rahman?
So the Tunku Abdul Rahman Foundation has been around since 1966. It was established as an act of parliament in honour of our first Prime Minister, Almarhum Tunku Abdul Rahman, to develop young Malaysians to shape better futures for themselves through higher education access and empowerment. And initially, the foundation started off by giving out loans, financial assistance, and scholarships. But since 2020, the foundation has underwent a strategic revamp and now has renewed its focus to empower young people, particularly those from underserved communities, through the Closing the Gap program, a higher education access and mentoring program for secondary school students, revamped the Tunku Abdul Rahman scholarship into a comprehensive undergraduate scholarship. And I believe we'll be talking about that a little bit more today, as well as introducing the Future Ready program and employability upskilling program in partnership with Accenture. So that's a little bit about us.
So, Reno, you mentioned that in 2020, y'all had a sort of revamp. How did that idea come about? Because the organization has been there for the longest of time. What changed in 2020?
I think it was like 2019, 2020. And it's because the foundation used to provide scholarships and loans primarily on a merits basis, right? Like many other scholarships out there. And acknowledging that, you know, inequality gaps have risen over the years, that was like a call for us to think about what we needed to change. And one of the key aspects of it was because the Closing the Gap team that was independently run previously under Teach for Malaysia was brought in to revamp the foundation. And their experiences working with young people, especially students from underserved communities, helped them recognize some of these barriers that exist for students to pursue higher education, especially within the scholarship landscape. So that experience was brought into the foundation to then revamp the scholarship. So the Tunku Abdul Rahman Scholarship has actually been around since 2007, but it used to take a more merits approach. And so then that has changed starting 2020.
So let's dive into the details. Celine, give me an overview of the Tunku Abdul Rahman Scholarship and what y'all are trying to achieve through the scholarship. What are its objectives?
All right, so the Tunku Abdul Rahman Scholarship, or we call it BITAR, the BSc for Tunku Abdul Rahman, is a comprehensive undergraduate degree scholarship that supports Malaysian students to study at any course at any local public or private university. So we're more than just a scholarship. While we do provide a comprehensive financial support through 9 different types of allowances, but we don't only focus on financial aid. For scholars, they will go through a 2-year leadership development program. They will lead their own community projects, they receive mentorship, and they also be exposed to many different external opportunities. So all in all, I can say that BITAR is a holistic scholarship that is open to everyone, but we do prioritize high potential students from high need or underrepresented backgrounds, and we aim to develop them to thrive in higher education and beyond. So our goal is to empower our Tunku scholars, or what we call our scholars, to develop themselves as young leaders in their communities so that they can contribute to the nation in their own ways.
So how does the selection process work?
All right, so I can share that our process is slightly different because we practice a holistic approach. So we don't look at academics or need through a singular lens, but we take into account many different factors. So for example, we do not have a fixed academic requirement. So let's just say a candidate who scores below a 3.0 CGPA but has diverse work or life experiences by taking, you know, different part-time jobs or being a caretaker of the family. So this candidate does show high potential despite their academic grades. And we also don't define needs solely by household income, about multiple dimensions of poverty, such as family education, geographic location, size of family, and more. So let's just say, for example, like if a candidate who may not necessarily categorize as a B40 from B40 household, but this candidate is the first in the family to enter higher education and also come from a single parent household. So this candidate will be taken into consideration as well. So to put it simply, we select based on holistic dimensions like need, mission and value fit, leadership potential, personal aspirations and more. So we assess all this through the background information and essays, but the essays are just for us to get to know them better beyond like official documentation.
So one thing I noticed about Tunku Abdul Rahman scholars over the years is they are, you know, the recipients of the scholarship are very diverse. It seems like a very inclusive approach. How do y'all promote and maintain this inclusivity and diversity among the recipients?
Yeah, I'll take that question. Mm-hmm. I think inclusivity and diversity is something that we're very intentional about during both the recruitment selection and the scholarship program that Celine mentioned. And for us, we recognize that the definition on what diversity means goes far beyond race and religion, right? And as such, we recognize the importance of socioeconomic diversity among the candidates that we bring through the scholarship program. And as such, we have had about more than 80% of our scholarship recipients over the last couple of years since 2020 come from B40 backgrounds. And we also do then accept a small number of non-B40 candidates who are either exceptionally talented or have underwent extenuating circumstances and can contribute to the cohort, as we recognize that interclass relationships are also integral for them to raise overall aspiration and social and cultural capital of students from lower income backgrounds. So that diversity is something that we're very intentional about. And I must acknowledge that it's a work in progress. And beyond just like socioeconomic backgrounds, some of the factors were also mentioned by Celine. But I think one that I want to highlight is geographical representation, striving to ensure that our cohorts are representative of youth across the country. So currently we have students from 20% of our students come from Sabah and Sarawak, close to about 50% are from West Malaysia, excluding KL and Selangor, and then the remaining is KL and Selangor. And that's something that we've worked on over the years. It's not something that we've had as such, and I recognize that there's area for improvement in that aspect. But the key platform that really, really helps us to promote inclusivity and diversity among scholars, they are not just meant to be numbers that we put on an annual report, but for our scholars to be able to come together is part of the two-year leadership development program. We want to increase capital and engagement of our students through this program, which is led by Celine. And it serves as an opportunity for students to come together, both virtually and physically, for workshops, conferences, community projects, and other opportunities. So for me, this is usually the highlight of our scholarship program, because when you interview candidates, you meet them personally. But when you put them in a cohort of 30 other people, you see how they interact with other people. And those meaningful interactions, mutual understanding or collaboration to solve community projects or community challenges for that matter, is something that I think is truly valuable as part of the scholarship program. So if I may share, quoting what you also mentioned, something that our scholars say to me when they come for the first in-person program is that they share that it's the first time they've been in such a diverse environment. Right. I think Sid can attest to this as well. And it's the kind of feeling where they don't really see someone who looks like me or is like me. And it's a very unique experience. And I think that's really what's different about the scholarship. And while I've said all of this, I think it's very, very important to acknowledge that it's a work in progress and there's always room for growth. We are actively refining our recruitment strategies. For example, this year, we've put out content in different languages to reach out to students from underrepresented communities, conducted information sessions with Indigenous groups of students. And I think there is a lot more work to be done. So we're always happy to also get feedback on how we can improve on ensuring the diversity and inclusivity, not just at the end stage of the scholarship program, but, you know, the process of it. Yeah.
And what is the importance of taking this approach of providing equitable scholarships? What are the limitations of the more traditional merit-based scholarships?
I think with regards to just equitable scholarships in itself, I think we've got to acknowledge that higher education is an important vehicle for social mobility. Research has also shown that B40 students with degree qualifications are 4.6 times more likely to be upwardly mobile in comparison to their peers. And I think what's very important for us to then acknowledge is that unfortunately many students from these backgrounds experience financial and social barriers that prevent them from pursuing higher education. And in simple terms, I guess higher education is supposed to then offer opportunities for people to move upwards, but then instead it often reinforces advantages for those who are already privileged. And this also can then lead to very harmful narratives on what success or excellence can look like. So by providing equitable scholarships, we aim to break some of these barriers and create opportunities for all. And how do we do this as part of the Tunku Abdul Rahman Scholarship is, for example, like Sunin mentioned, 9 types of different allowances. We've learned that it's not just enough to provide tuition fee waivers or a monthly living allowance. There's so many invisible costs of pursuing higher education, from a laptop, formal wear, the cost of like printing books, thesis, all these things, right? Or even like leadership development is something that's quite a unique thing, you know, to be able to access, or it's a privilege to be able to access. So we want to make sure that everybody has like a fair shot at pursuing higher education, not just being able to access it, but to be able to do well. And on the context of like merits-based scholarships, I think or to explain it very briefly, is that many merits-based scholarships look at it from an academic grade or standpoint, right? Sometimes they have cutoff scores of 3.7 or 3.8 CGPA, or sometimes a string of A's at an SPM level. I personally was affected by this because I come from a single parent household, and after pursuing SPM, I did not have a string of A's and therefore was not qualified for many different scholarships. Very lucky that the Jeffrey Chia Foundation decided to award me with a scholarship and considered me for the potential I had. And that's when I realized, like, wow, merit-based scholarships do unlock people with potential. And they prioritize academic achievements and may overlook diverse starting points and circumstances faced by students. And so we want to make some of these invisible barriers visible, right? And I would say, for instance, like the Tunku Abdul Rahman Scholarship, because we don't have a merit-based assessment, we look at things holistically based on some of the criteria that Celine mentioned, and we don't have a minimum CGPA requirement as such. And this has really allowed us to have such a wide talent pool. I think sometimes it's also really, really wide because we don't have those cutoff scores, but it has allowed us to identify potential. And if I may share like a story, we had a candidate whose name is Razman. He is from Kinabatang, Sabah. And when he applied for this scholarship, he had a 2.31 CGPA. And he was pursuing mathematics and economics at UNIMAS. And he comes from a family with 8 siblings. His father was extremely ill when he was in university, continued his entire undergraduate degree with a Samsung J1 Ace, like a really small phone, and at the same time had to provide for the family. So he took on odd jobs like painting buildings and working at a plantation. And maybe in many other scholarship programs, Razman may not have even qualified past like your first selection process. But when we read Razman's essay questions, we realized that this boy definitely has potential, has commitment to serve his community in Sabah, has an understanding of the social challenges that his community faces and wants to change that, not just for himself, but his community. And if I may mention, he was also the first in his family to go to university. We're very thankful that a corporate partner that we work with, AHAM, recognized this potential as well and sponsored Razman. And he has now graduated with like a second upper class degree. He's already started to work and give back to Sabah. He's also pursued exchange programs, which are all opportunities that he may not have necessarily had if not for a scholarship program. And I think these, like such selection process that go beyond traditional indicators of merit, help us to identify potential like Razman and Razman's only one of the many students we work with. And there's so many other stories like this that we can share.
On the show with me today is Renuga Indran and Celine Louis from Yayasan Tunku Abdul Rahman. We will be back with more on Live and Learn after the break. Keep it here on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Renuga Indran and Celine Louis from Yayasan Tunku Abdul Rahman, and we're talking about equitable scholarships. So, usually scholarships are very, like you said, merit-based from an academic perspective. And even if they broaden it, it goes like, okay, we are merit-based, but from a co-curriculum perspective, right? So who has the most certs? How many clubs were you in? And are you the head prefect? And so on and so forth. But you, Yayasan Tunku Abdul Rahman is taking an approach to look at things really holistically, beyond just academic, beyond just co-curriculum, but to look at, are you the first child, son or daughter to enter the university? That definitely is going to play a role in your selection process. Do you come from, what kind of family background do you come from? I think Renu brought up an excellent sort of thing to think about how y'all look at, you know, whether they have commitment to improve their communities, local communities, and all of that. What is the importance of taking this approach?
Our scholarship goal is to, well, our slogan is "Membuat Pemimpin Untuk Negara Ku." So we hope to instill these values, these mindsets in our scholars as well. So one day, they take leadership roles in various different fields. It doesn't matter what field. It could be politics, it could be STEM, it could be research and so on. We want them to champion this idea in their workplace or in the organization in the future as well, to ensure that every organization is able to practice this holistic approach as well, because recognize that an individual is not just defined solely by, you know, what's on the paper, but so many different, you know, aspects of their lives. So we hope that this approach can not just be practiced in our organization, but to be spread to outwards as well, so that the nation can eventually become a more equitable society.
So let's talk about some of the details of the scholarship, right? So what's interesting is that this is not just a scholarship per se. You get a scholarship, you go to university, and then you get your degree, and then it's done. This program has a 2-year leadership development aspect. What opportunity, Celine, does this 2-year leadership development program offer to scholarship recipients?
All right, so this 2-year leadership development program, we focus on 3 main pillars, I would say. The first one is ethics and values. The second one is community leadership. And third one is employability. And we do this through 3 ways as well, like leadership conferences, community projects, and also supplementary opportunities. So let's start with community projects. So it's mandatory for each Tunku scholar to lead their own community projects that are aligned with their goals and to give back to the community. So we don't want them to only start giving back after they graduate, right? We want them to start now as students. And some of them already have this idea for a long time, you know, based on the issues they experienced growing up. They want to address this problem, just that they don't have the resources to do so. So this program allows them to turn their idea into reality. So for example, like one of our scholars who is pursuing law, Sharizal, he kickstarted a digital advocacy known as Workers Unmuted. So this advocacy is to cultivate a future where all workers in Malaysia, they possess the knowledge and comprehension of their rights. So what he did was he utilized various mediums, including a video explainers, informative infographics, interviews, podcasts, and so on and so forth. He also set up free legal aid clinic to bridge the knowledge gap and raise awareness about labor law among like marginalized workers specifically. We also have like 3 scholars from East Malaysia, Vivian, Khadija, and Hezron. So they recognize the gap in assessing secondary education among Sarawakian students. So they conducted a camp for primary school students in Betong, Sarawak, to expose them to like secondary school pathways and available educational assistance to encourage them to pursue education. And lastly, we also allow our scholars to gain access to supplementary opportunities. So for example, we connect them to internships and opportunities that they may not have access to, because some of these opportunities may be exclusive to those who are already had a head start in the field or in urban areas only. And lastly, as part of our 9 different types of allowances as well, we do provide a professional development allowance for them to lead their own learning on what they want to do personally.
I think that's really wonderful. And another aspect that I feel is very important is the mentorship aspect of this program. What can people expect from their mentors? Would each scholar get assigned a mentor? How would it work? What can people expect from that? Because usually, again, when it comes to scholarships, you get a scholarship and then you're on your own. But here it feels like throughout the time where you are this scholarship recipient, you will have a lot of guidance, a lot of support to really develop your overall self, right? Talk to me about the importance of the mentorship aspect.
All right. So I would say the mentorship aspect is extremely important. And the kind of mentorship they receive varies. So as staff, it's constant. As staff, will always be there to mentor them. And we also experimented with different types of mentorship in terms of getting an alumni to mentor them or their own peers as well. So how we do this is we provide personalized guidance to push them to their fullest potential. So, for example, as mentioned previously, like all Tunku scholars have to lead their own community projects. So we mentor them to execute a project that is not only impactful, but something that they can be proud of themselves, because we don't want them to do it just for the sake of a scholarship requirement. And we also get to know their goals and interests and connect them to opportunities and internships that we are aware of. So on top of that, we understand that this scholarship journey is a unique one, right? Because this journey consists of conferences, of projects, and so on and so forth. So we created this peer learning or peer mentorship model where they can lean on each other, because as mentioned by Renu, our Tunku scholars comes from diverse backgrounds, from various different places, and they all bring different perspectives and skills to the table. So we want them to learn from each other as well. So, and lastly, because as mentioned, we do have certain requirements in terms of projects and so on. If any of them struggle in completing the program deliverables, we do not take a punitive approach, but instead we do something like behavioral coaching to guide them to improve. Because we understand that our scholars are juggling multiple different responsibilities. You know, some of them are still being the caretaker of their family and so on. So we want to know how we can help them to excel.
So, Renu, earlier you shared a very heartwarming story of someone from Sabah who, you know, his life essentially, you know, changed because of this scholarship. Could you share a couple of other success stories or examples of how the scholarship has positively impacted the recipients?
I think there are quite a few that I can share, but I also don't want to share success stories without highlighting beginnings.
Right.
Because I think that may result in a perception, right, of not understanding the journey it took for someone to get there. But in general, like, our alumni can be found in very diverse industries in Malaysia, be it education, business, healthcare, science, technology, environment, the arts, and so on and so forth. But if there was one story that I would like to personally highlight, would be a story of a scholar from our 2020 cohort. Her name is Sarah Salini. So she did a diploma in tourism, and after completing her diploma, didn't have sufficient funds to pursue higher education. Although she got an offer to study abroad in Australia and pursue anthropology, which was actually her interest. So instead of pursuing higher education, she actually worked for about 2 years, if I'm not wrong. And that was when she had to, she worked in the tourism industry and she worked in Masjid Chamek. And while she was working there, she actually engaged in a lot of community work, especially with the unhoused community, that sparked her interest in anthropology further. So she also comes from a single parent household, and her mom was mainly a babysitter. So at that point of time, I think it was during the pandemic in 2020, she decided to return to university, but she could not afford it still. So she used up her EPF savings to pay off for the initial semesters. So at this point, you would recognize that Sarah's probably older than many of her peers to pursue higher education or apply for a scholarship. But because we don't have an age cutoff, she was able to apply for the scholarship and pursue anthropology at University of Malaya, where she was part of many different organizations and advocacy work, including AWAM, where she spearheaded the student aspect of the proposing the anti-sexual harassment bill. And then she interned with Malaysian Nature Society and then was then a community officer in Rimau, working closely with the Jahai community, the intersection between education and conservation. And she's now doing a master's in anthropology. And this is truly an example of a student who was delayed in her journey to pursue higher education, but not denied that opportunity because of an equitable scholarship approach that was taken. And at from the standpoint of a scholarship provider, it was recognizing that talent that Sarah had and, you know, giving her a chance despite her starting point in tourism and then wanting to pursue anthropology. Many people would question that, you know, transition, right? And I think that's an example that always reminds me of the importance of allowing students to explore that potential, or for us to give them a chance or a second chance for that matter of fact. And I think we've gone on to see it with students who've faced multiple rejections to pursue higher education and then being awarded a scholarship to with us to read law at UKM and then to read law at Harvard University, or scholars who are the first in their family to pursue higher education despite many challenges. And I think all these stories are a testament to something that I think we've not mentioned as much today, which is resilience. I think that's a factor that we emphasize a lot as part of the scholarship program, mm-hmm. and recognize it's one thing that we can count on in identifying talent and potential, that ability to overcome challenges and to persevere. And so we look for that actually with the students that we work with through essay questions as well as interviews. And I think that's really, really the type of students that we want to engage. And at the end of the day, we want to see how our scholars are able to create better futures, not just for themselves, but for their communities and then the country. I think it's about cultivating a youth who think beyond themselves. Yeah.
So on that note, Celine, how can interested individuals apply for the Tunku Abdul Rahman Scholarship, and what are key steps in the application process?
Right. So if you're interested, you can go to yayasantara.org.my. You can click the application button. So this application, we ask for your personal background and also 4 essay questions. And these questions can be answered in either English or Bahasa Malaysia. And just to reiterate, these questions are simply for us to get to know you better. So key tips will be just to be authentic, to be yourself, because it may sound cliche, but it's true, because we just want to know your story and your reflections. We want to hear from you. So a lot of people feel worried, like, oh, I don't have any, you know, substantial leadership accomplishments. You know, in pandemic, I didn't do much. And it's totally fine, because we're not looking for impressive titles or whatnot. We want to hear about your experiences, your ambitions, you know, what you have learned and what you want to accomplish. Because I wanted to highlight that we do not have a bond in this scholarship. All we ask for in return is for you to contribute back to Malaysia. So we want to know, what are your goals and aspirations in doing that?
And before we wrap this conversation up, would each of you have a final message for us, starting with you, Renu?
I think, like, from this conversation in itself, I personally began to recognize that pursuing higher education has so much to do with privilege or your starting points. You know, some people have like an invisible knapsack filled with all these tools that help them succeed, right? Whether it's fluency in a language or the access to knowledge on higher education pathways, or that social or cultural capital that you've accumulated through activities like debate or like interact clubs, that, you know, many others in that same backpack may not have those experiences. They may have other experiences like being able to be a caretaker to a family member, or having, you know, hard skills that they've learned through jobs that they've worked on. And I think it's very important to acknowledge that that backpack is invisible. Like, unless we really take that time to look inside what everyone has in their backpack, we wouldn't be able to know where we're gonna, we wouldn't be able to assess a candidate holistically. And I think as such, just want to reiterate that that's really why the Tunku Abdul Rahman Foundation has shifted in its approach to ensure that we build a equitable and just society. And we are eager to collaborate with scholarship providers, higher education institutions, educators, employers, to adopt a comprehensive and equitable approach in recognizing talent in various stages. And so we invite those who are interested to speak to us about equitable employment or internship opportunities, to volunteer or mentor with us, or partnership and opportunities to support more youth to create better futures for themselves, their communities, and the country.
Celine, final message from you.
So it's just pretty simple. It's just, if you feel afraid of applying, you know, do not reject yourself, you know, just take the opportunity, and you never know when it could lead you next. So we really hope to look forward to seeing many applications, and we hope to see, you know, how else we can do to empower more students in the future as well.
Celine, Renu, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
I've been speaking to Renuga Indran and Celine Louis from Yayasan Tunku Abdul Rahman. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can also check us out on podcasts. We're available on the BFM app, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.